Kia ora koutou, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Today, the wage subsidy to end on September the 1st. That has been supporting nearly 2 million New Zealanders. What happens when it comes off? Infometrics' Brad Olsen on the panel today. Some Wellington apartment owners are facing financial ruin as the cost of meeting earthquake-proof standards has skyrocketed. We discussed that too. And continuing the discussion of our adversarial politics from yesterday, no one endorses toxic behaviour, but do we have to be nice? It'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on how do you view politics in New Zealand? Too adversarial or just about right? Text us 2101. And we talk about our consistently high melanoma cancer rates, and yet less than half of New Zealand schools have good sun hat policies. We discuss that with Associate Professor Tony Reader. I'm with Michelle Bogue today, Strategic Communication Consultant, and Shane Tepo, HR Manager at Mega Limited. To news in Australia first, citizens in 9 public housing towers continue to be in a severe lockdown, not allowed out of their rooms at all. These are vertical cruise ships, Acting Chief Medical Officer Professor Paul Kelly said. We talked to Steve Ulu in a tower in Flemington yesterday on the situation.
Well, it's absolutely traumatic. I have a friend that lives down in the same building, and his son is suffering from mental illness. And now he's saying, Dad, what's happening? And his dad is not able to give him any answers. So there is a lot of frustration. Look, the shock is turning into frustration. The frustration is turning into anger, not knowing what's going to happen. No plan, no authority from the government has knocked on my door saying, is there anything you need?
Also, the New South Wales-Victoria border will close at 12:01 a.m. tomorrow. Victoria recorded 127 new coronavirus cases yesterday, its highest ever daily case total. With us is Melbourne-based journalist for The Australian, Remy Varga. Welcome to the panel, Remy.
Hi, Wallace. Thank you very much for having me.
I understand that you are outside one of the towers now, indeed one of the Fleming Towers and Racecourse Road right now.
Yes, I am. I'm just on a side street off Racecourse Road in Flemington. So how the towers work is that there's a few towers in an estate in Flemington and an estate in North Melbourne. They're about a 2-minute drive away from each other, so I can see 3 towers at the moment.
What are you seeing on the ground there? This is a severe lockdown, so obviously people can't get out, but is there a police presence?
Yes. So just before I came back to my car to talk to you, there are about maybe 50 police officers and government workers, some wearing hazmat gear. They were preparing to enter the tower, presumably to talk to the residents or offer them a coronavirus test.
How do people feel this has been handled, Remy? I mean, we talked to a resident yesterday who said that the only information they had was from the media and also real issues around food.
So the people inside the towers, they found out about it on when the announcement was made or just after on the 6 p.m. or 5 p.m. news. They weren't informed prior, which deviates from how lockdowns have usually been handled in Victoria. Usually you get 2 days notice and then you're given time to prepare and restock your pantry and things like that. But at this point in time, for this particular hard lockdown where people aren't even allowed to leave their apartments for any reason, they're not allowed to open their front door and go outside and talk to their neighbours. In this case, they found out when it happened. Daniel Andrews made the announcement, and then a few residents went outside and were stopped by police and were told that they had to go back inside. So obviously there's a lot of confusion. Took the Victorian government some time to go in and talk to these people. In fact, potentially not all of them have been doorknocked. I actually don't know if that's the case. I know it took about 24 hours before door knocking began. At least that's what the residents have told us. So, they're obviously quite confused. I mean, the demographics of the towers, a lot of them are refugees from East Africa, so Somalia, Eritrea, Ethiopia, countries like that. Their English isn't great. You also have, you know, you have large families sharing small apartments, and they're not allowed to go outside. And there's been, as I said before, very little communication. Food started to be delivered properly from yesterday, I believe. There were reports of, like, bags of half-frozen curry being left on people's doorsteps and them kind of finding it when they opened their door. But as of yesterday, there were food trucks bringing in actual boxes of goods. So hopefully the situation has improved since then. But yeah, it's very shambolic.
Just finally, moving on to the border closure tonight, 12:01, I think it is. So this border between New South Wales and Victoria will close. How is it going to work?
Yep. So it will be enforced on both sides. You will have Victoria Police, New South Wales Police. You will also have some workers from the ADF, which is Australia's military, enforcing the border. Residents in towns along the border will be granted permits to let them go from side to side, because a lot of these towns don't live their lives as if they live on a hard border, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they go from town to town. I think that on the New South Wales side, the healthcare is actually provided by Victoria. I think the only major hospital is run by the Victorian government, as an example. And then, like, if you go to the town of Mugoa, the border is actually just this rickety wooden bridge that can fit two cars, and people just drive across it in their daily lives.
All right, well, we'll keep abreast of the situation there. But for the meantime, journalist for The Australian, Remy Varga, thank you very much for your time.
No worries at all. Thank you, Wallace.
Shane, when you see the situation in Melbourne, what comes to mind? Pretty dire situation, isn't it?
It's a dire situation, and I agree with the talk that we need to have a plan to open up our borders, but we can't open up with Victoria. You know, we can't open it up with the UK. You know, Boris Johnson said, hey, let's send people, let's open up the borders and our people can go down to New Zealand. You know, they can't go to Leicestershire, let alone travel to New Zealand. So I am worried about it, that we are being a little bit preemptive about this. But it's the humanity, the situation those poor people are in Melbourne, where they don't have access to food. You know, it's just a
half-frozen bag of curry, can you imagine?
Also, I think the situation is going to get worse before it gets better there.
What's your?
I don't think we've reached the apex.
What's your reading of the situation in Melbourne and any lessons to be learned? Here's a lesson, for example. I mean, considering how tricky this virus is, to use the word the Prime Minister has said, should we be quarantining and isolating in more isolated areas, as one professor of public health told RNZ yesterday? What do you think? Instead of using CBD motels?
Look, the problem is in the way that those people were quarantined in Melbourne, right? The fact was they had private security in place who mixed with the residents and went home to their families. That's why they've got community transmission. If they had had proper procedures in place, maybe with the army, maybe with all those people who were coming out of the hotel wearing PPE every day, they would have not had this outbreak. So it gets back to that situation of doing it properly. Doesn't matter where you are if you don't do it properly.
As Tony Blakely said, with militarised precision. But you can see, though, how easy things can get out of control. It doesn't take much.
But the reality is that the more you extend it, the more you open up the opportunity for people to come, whether it be students, whether it be people on work visas. The reality is the more numbers that you expose it to, the higher the risk is.
So you have to have the proper systems in place that work properly. And we've seen heaps of examples of the systems being there but not actually happening as they should, like a whole lot of people getting out of those hotels without ever being tested. Now, that is simply a system that isn't working. If Melbourne had had the army wearing PPE monitoring those hotels, they would not have had community transmission.
Well, but the fact is the system works when you have least number of people that are exposed to breaking border and breaking control. And I think opening up the borders at this point in time too soon, too fast, could be disastrous.
But it doesn't matter if you only have a few people who are quarantined if you're not doing it properly. You can still get community transmission.
You have the ability to do it. You have the ability to focus on lesser numbers to get it right. The more numbers you have, it's simple logic, Michelle. The more numbers you have, the more opportunity for exposure you have.
Yes, but we had community transmission generated from people coming into our borders who were not being properly quarantined. Remember that high trust environment where people were told to go home and stay home? They didn't. And that was a flaw in the system.
We had really high rates of compliance.
Really high rates of compliance.
It doesn't matter if one person gets through. I mean, I live in the viaduct. We had tourists who'd come off a plane that morning walking around the viaduct looking for somewhere to eat.
But again, I get to my central point. The more people you allow into your borders at this point in time, the greater the risk.
Yeah, we're going to continue with the borders. Stay with that because we are going to be continuing on with that. It's been estimated that a trans-Tasman bubble could give our flag and tourism sector a boost of $4 billion. Plans to create a bubble are still being discussed, but there is also talk of our borders opening up to Australia state by state in light of the surge of COVID cases in Victoria. Ernst & Young Australia have crunched the numbers on what a full bubble would mean for New Zealand tourism operators. Now, Prime Minister has been cautious about any moves to open our borders to all of Australia, saying safety must come first. With us is AUT Professor of Tourism, Dr. Michael Lewick. Dr. Lewick, kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
Let's start with that injection of cash for our operators around the country. I mean, that would stop many of them potentially going out of business, wouldn't it?
Potentially, yes, of course. I mean, any type of economic input you have is helping the operators that are directly affected, absolutely.
The Trans-Tasman bubble could see a $4 billion turbocharge. That's what a report by Ernst & Young Australia said. How do you see this? It's quite a difficult balance because clearly people want to open up the economy in the right way.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And you also have to read the report very carefully. It says it would be the $4 billion if we were basically opening today and back to normal. So that's obviously not going to happen. And I think we need to be very, very careful in estimating the amounts that might be direct cash input into the economy. On the other hand, we don't know what the potential costs are with that. And if you see the previous discussion about how it's managed and how quickly something can turn around, if we have community transmission and we have to go back into lockdown, what are the costs then? So, yes, we welcome the money that comes in. On the other hand, it can cost us an awful lot if that is not very, very carefully managed.
So when's the right time to actually open up our borders, do you think? I mean, another report came out with Peter Gluckman, Helen Clark and Rob Fyfe, you know, and to quote Peter Gluckman, it's unrealistic to imagine that there will never be cases of COVID in New Zealand. It's just logically inevitable. It was made clear that elimination, David Skeggs made it clear that elimination meant reducing it to a predetermined low level. Well, we've done that and we need to keep on doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm probably the wrong person for that. I'm a tourism person, so I can't really comment too much on when is the right point. To me, the right point is when we can safely do, though. What that means in terms of safely doing so is exactly the discussion that specialists have to have in terms of, yes, can be avoided at all. I see it very similar. Inevitably, sooner or later, we will get cases again. you know, COVID-19 will be rampant around the world for quite some time. And if we open the borders, even just to Australia or just the Pacific Islands, it's almost inevitable that, that one or two sneak through, and we are in trouble.
Mm. Thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Michael Lewick there, AUT Professor of Tourism. Thank you. That was the inevitability. That was echoed, Michelle Beaux, when we had a Nobel Prize-winning immunologist on the program from Melbourne, the Peter Doherty from the Doherty Institute. He simply said this: if you open up the borders, there will be more cases.
Yes.
Are you willing to accept that?
Well, at the moment, our borders are partly open. Right? The only way to have no cases is to
shut them.
No one in, right? So what Peter Gluckman and his institute were saying, and it was interesting to see the support from Helen Clark for that proposition, is let's put in place strategies so that we can still receive people in. And I think it's a very valid point. We may never get rid of COVID-19, so we have to adapt to having it in the world. It may get worse, it may get better, but we have to adapt to having it. And that means the right sort of procedures that are properly done to minimise that risk. We don't know. At the moment we are, because we've only got cases at the borders. We haven't got community transmission, right? The question is, I mean, if somebody jumps a couple of fences and gets away, that's a risk. How can somebody jump a couple of fences and get away? That's a failure in the system.
Higher fences?
We don't know. I don't know. But
well, no, you keep the numbers under control. And you keep the numbers under control until the rest of the world catches up, basically, to where New Zealand is at. Now, here's the thing that, and I think it's as simple as that. And also, can I tell you, I don't think New Zealand's psyche is up to opening the borders up at this point in time. I think if you talk to people outside the Beltway, outside the political commentary, I don't think they are ready for it. Absolutely,
okay.
I don't think they're
all
ready
right.
for it.
Let's do a poll. Text me 2101. Would you like to see a partial reopening of our border with parts of Australia or the Pacific? Yes or no? 2101. We'll do a poll.
Yeah.
And what about that? What about David Seymour's suggestion? And it's been talked about by more than David Seymour, but opening a Pacific bubble first, say, for example, with the Cook Islands?
Well, again, it depends on the risk, and you have to analyse the risk. And do you say we let them in from the Pacific Islands, but we still won't impose policies around quarantine and PPE? Of course not. We could do much, much better than we are with PPE at the border. I mean, we are not testing people until they've been here 3 days. There are now tests being developed, right? Why aren't we testing people when they get here and making them wait for 6 hours until
It's the 3 and 12 day thing, as Dr. Susie Wiles said. People can test negative but still be incubating COVID-19, a phase that can last from about 2 to 10 days. And I know that you've advocated testing pre-plane flight.
Yeah.
Ain't going to work.
Well, it is. It will pick some up, Wallace.
No, it won't.
Yes, it will. Because not everybody's going to be at the same rate of incubation.
No, but three and twelve is the optimum.
That's right.
That's what people like Susie and everyone else says. Here's the thing: I agree with the Gluckman Clark report. It's an aspirational report. The big question is how, when, and who. Yeah, I want to travel to Rarotonga. I want to give them my money. But at the end of the day, we're talking about a population of 9,000. Okay. You know, there's no community transition. We can but that's not really the issue. The issue is how we agree and how we adhere to mass travel again.
Now,
and that's the real point.
So we have had a huge response to our poll.
Cool.
And could I just put a word out through the glass here, to our wonderful producer Mary? Would you kindly count for us the yes or no's coming through, if we have time? And at the end of the show, we'll tell you, would you like to see a partial reopening of the border, yes or no? We'll tell you the numbers.
It is a ridiculous question without parameters, OK? Everybody wants a safe opening of the border, right? If you just say, should we open the border? Nobody wants that without safety.
No, I said a partial reopening.
Doesn't matter. Partial doesn't mean safe. It's actually about safe, not how many people we let in.
All right. Okay, so, wow, huge response. Overwhelmingly, just looking at my screen, no's so far.
That's but
there's
what
a couple
I said.
Of, a couple of yeses. Just keeping on this, where do you see this end? Because obviously, I'm just want to expand on this. We can't keep in isolation forever.
Right.
How do you... Obviously, we're not scientists. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think what we have to do is we have to allow the rest of the world to catch up a bit. You know, no one could advocate that we're going to open up the borders to Victoria or even parts of Australia, because you know, the reality is those borders, Victoria borders, are thousands of miles long. You know, you can't just say, oh, well, we're going to fly just in and out of Melbourne. If you're going to open to Victoria, you've got to open to the rest of Australia, except perhaps Tasmania. You know, so I'm not quite sure how it ends, but I don't think the rest of the world is up to where we're at, and we're certainly not prepared to travel to Australia at this one time. UK, the USA, you know, many of those countries have not reached the apex in terms of community transition.
Just one response here among the many. If we can't even bring Kiwis home, why would we consider letting people from overseas come before them? Also, if we were to spread COVID-19 to a Pacific Island country in exchange for the odd holiday, who would then take care of the medical costs?
Well, Rarotonga, we would, because we do provide healthcare services there, you know, because of the agreement we have with the Cook Islands.
Start with the Pacific, then partial with the states of Australia. Love, Charlie. 28 past four, the panel RNZ National. Just a brief word on this. On the panel yesterday, I spoke with former National Party MP Marilyn Waring on her experiences being a woman MP, and she raised concerns about adversarial politics. Have a listen.
And it was my constituency that kept me sane and who almost resurrected me each weekend so I could go back to the hellhole. And in the hellhole, the worst abuse I had was from my own caucus colleagues. You know, I would be standing up advocating something in caucus. I remember this one very well. And if my colleagues would say, oh, normal women don't think like that.
So both Paula Bennett and Claire Curran told of the toxic culture of Parliament recently. So after the headlines, we'll discuss that briefly, the nature of adversarial politics. That's been an article in the spin-off by Daniel McLaughlin. With us this afternoon is Michelle Bogue and Shane Tipoe.